It's finally springtime in western Wisconsin. For most of that, for most of us, it means getting outdoors, enjoying the weather, and taking it easy. But for Wisconsin farmers, it's a very busy time. In fact, it's always a busy time if you're a farmer. Today on the West Side, we'll speak with our regional and state leaders of agriculture to find out what's happening with Wisconsin's dairy, grain, beef, and fruit, much more growers, and what they can expect right here in western Wisconsin. This is the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm joined by four men on the front lines of agriculture. I'd like to introduce them one by one. First, I'll start with Tom Ferguson. He is the owner of Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire and Galesville. Tom, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Rich. Good to be here.
Good to have you. Next, Mark Hagedorn. He's new to the program. He is the UW Extension Agriculture Agent for Eau Claire County, and he's a heck of a guy. Mark Hagedorn, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Rich. Nice to be here.
Good to have you. We've got Jim Holt. He is the president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. And Jim, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Rich. Glad to be here.
And also we've got Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union.
Thanks, Rich.
Thanks for being here. Listeners, we'd like to hear from you. If you've got a question about agriculture, give us a call, 800-228-5615. A lot of topics to discuss. And if you're a producer yourself of any crop, or even if you're an organic alpaca farmer, we still want to hear about what's going on in your world. 800-228-5615. So, Tom, I'm going to start with you. 2 weeks ago, I think it was 2 weeks ago Saturday, temperatures across the state dipped way down. For most, this was just kind of annoying at best, but for some fruit growers, it was devastating. Wollersheim Winery got a lot of news. They're down in Prairie du Sac. Reported a loss of 80% of their red grapes because of the freeze, and it was said that the freeze was especially tough on grapes and apples. So did this frost hurt any of your apple trees here in Eau Claire and in Galesville?
Yeah, it sure did. It's kind of a tough thing. That was a long night. We broke out the parkas. But in our orchards, we have orchards in Galesville, here in Eau Claire, and also in Chippewa Falls.
Oh.
It's kind of all about location, location, location. The spots in our orchard that are higher on a hill, that's why orchards are traditionally on hills. It allows for cold air drainage. So those trees survived a lot better. The trees, the flowers survived a lot better than some of the lower areas. But all in all, I'd say Chippewa Falls orchard for us is probably about a 40% loss there. Eau Claire, it's probably closer to 80%. And down in Galesville, probably about 50%. So a little painful.
Yeah, I imagine. Now, so you're up all night with this kind of a situation. And, I mean, is there anything that you can do, or is it kind of just helplessness? And
well, personally, I knew there wasn't anything I could do, so I went to bed.
Okay.
But it's kind of there are things that can be done. You know, you hear stories about people lighting fires, and
yeah,
in the old days it was smudge pots, and they don't really help, especially in a situation like that where it was by 2 o'clock in the morning it was already down 26 degrees or even colder in some spots.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that can really help are frost fans, big fans that can kind of break the inversion layer and bring some of that warmer air that's just above about 50 feet up.
Oh.
And bring that down. And that's usually good for a couple of degrees. So with apples in general, if it hits 28 degrees, you usually will lose about 10% when you're in bloom. If it gets down to 26 or lower, you might lose up to 90%. So it kind of depends on the stage of the tree, if the flowers are all the way open or if fruit's already set. So if you're down in a low area where the cold air accumulates, that's pretty tough. If you're on a hill, that can help. Now, in our situation, we have over 100,000 trees. So even if we have 40% of a crop, that's a lot of apples.
Mm-hmm.
So from people in the fall coming out to apple orchards and that kind of stuff, there's plenty of apples. You probably wouldn't even notice. For us, it's a bigger impact for our wholesale business, packing apples and sending them off to grocery stores. That's where we will really feel it.
All right. And gentlemen, if you feel free to jump in with any questions you may have here. Again, we're talking about agriculture in western Wisconsin and beyond. We're joined by a panel of guests, including Darren Von Ruden of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, Jim Holt of the Farm Bureau Federation here in Wisconsin, Mark Hagedorn of UW Extension. Now we're speaking with Tom Ferguson, owner of Ferguson's Orchards. So what is the budding fruit that is so delicate, right?
Yep. Yeah, that's like any flower. Yeah. Flowers are pretty sensitive to cold.
Sure.
With an apple tree, when a fruit bud opens up, that fruit bud opens into five flowers. And once that is open, those parts of the flower, the pistil and the stigma, all that, those are pretty sensitive things. Mm-hmm. And that's where the cold damage is. And so if that gets damaged and the fruit can't get pollinated and fertilized, it's not going to grow. And we're still a little early. Another week, people will really know what the extent of the damage is. The little fruitlets will just fall off.
Okay, I've got an analogy, and I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, but we're talking about the reproductive parts of the trees. So if we're walking into the water, you know, we got our bathing suit on, and it's like the first swim of the year. Once you get about waist deep, that's when it gets really cold. I mean, see an idea?
I'm having a hard time following that.
Oh, you are not. You're just all right.
Yeah,
all right.
It can be painful.
Yeah. So then if these buds are killed, nothing. There's not going to be any fruit at all, right?
Right.
On those buds that were damaged.
Those little fruitlets will just die and fall off. It doesn't affect the tree. The tree's still healthy. There's not going to be any fruit on the tree, so the trees are going to grow a lot.
Right.
So we'll have to deal with that next winter through pruning.
So they grow more when they're
yep,
not
there's
fruiting.
The fruit's the not there to suck away any energy, so sure. Everything will go into growing a tree. And we're not in the tree growing business. That sounds funny. We're in the apple growing business.
Interesting.
So we'll have that to deal with. But we still have to do everything we would normally do. We've got to make sure our pest management is really fine-tuned. We still have to mow the orchard, all of those other kinds of things that we typically do, tree training, all that stuff still all has to be done.
Let's talk about crop insurance. I mean, I know all the different crops have their different types of insurance. What's it like for orchards? I imagine it's not any different than if you're growing corn.
It's pretty similar. The two main insurance types are multi-peril insurance.
Okay.
And that's what comes into play here. You know, that's basically insuring your average production. So on a 5-year rolling average. So if you have multi-peril insurance, and there's different levels of that, that can really help. Luckily, we're pretty well insured that way. Mm-hmm. The other is hail insurance. Hail is typically the thing we worry about the most. And hail insurance is also you just insure to a certain level per acre and go with that. And so hopefully we won't have to deal with that on top of it. We don't like hard rain. So we just stay if we have a crop now, hopefully we can bring it all the way to the end. But multi-peril insurance really can help save an apple orchard.
We've got a new intrepid Westside WPR news intern, Ellery Lowry. She made calls around the region and spoke with some folks that run orchards and wineries. And one person told her that their crops over the past 5 years have been damaged and that they're just really frustrated to the point of thinking about getting out of the business. Has it been that bad in the last 5 years? Have there always been issues?
Well, it's like any farming. You're at the nature or at the mercy of Mother Nature. So you got to be able to take that. The last five, we've had four tough years out of five. Mm. People can remember back to 2012.
Dry as heck.
Which was probably a great year for a lot of other things, but for fruit trees, that was pretty tough. That was the same situation as now. We had a really bad frost during bloom. And then we've had two of the years where hail storms, pretty widespread around the state that got a lot of orchards. And then this year. So four out of five, been a little tough, but like anything, you only need one good year, you know, can survive a few years. And
sure.
So we kind of live off of that one. But we typically only plan to have one bad out of every five instead of four out of five. But We're committed to being it for the long haul, and it's mostly about management and making sure that your spending is in line and that you react to bad things, and you can usually make it through.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in if you've got any questions or comments for the program today on Western Wisconsin agriculture. The phone lines are wide open. Darren Von Rooten, please.
I guess I got a question for Tom, too.
Jump right in.
What are you hearing from other parts of the country? Have there been frost damages in other parts of the country, too, or has this kind of been focused here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I'm not sure how far that cold snap went.
There was an earlier cold snap in New York, and that was a real early frost that actually got so cold that it damaged the fruit buds well before bloom. Mm. So it varies throughout New York, but that was pretty devastating for New York. Michigan so far has escaped everything, and Washington seems to be able to get through anything. They're the perfect apple growing state. So,
yeah, I imagine that their climate is pretty stable. I mean, that doesn't seem to swing too much.
The Washington crop is down because they had such a huge crop last year. Oh. So the crop is down, but still, they'll still have a pretty good year. And throughout the state, both Wisconsin and Minnesota, it varies a lot. There are areas that didn't even get touched, and just different levels all the way from down the southeast, southwest. The western side and the southwest got stung a little harder than the others. Bayfield area, which is a large apple growing area, they came through just fine. They have
the warmth of the lake, right?
They have a big lake there to help them out. So, other than that, it's the orchards that were on really hilly areas high up. They did much better than the ones that are down in the lower areas.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm wondering, we're hearing a lot about changing climate, and definitely there's El Nino, there's La Nina, but more, beyond that, we're seeing changes in the Earth's climate. Some people are debating about, what's causing it, et cetera, but have you noticed changing climate making it more difficult or less difficult to grow fruit in western Wisconsin?
Well, it seems that the severity of storms have gotten worse. I mean, that's just from our experience. We've seen more hail in the last 10 years than we saw probably at any time before that. One of the things that we go by is when the Macintosh trees, when the flowers on the Macintosh trees first start to open. Hmm. And that's been recorded for 100 years. And even that's moved about 10 days earlier than it was even 20, 25 years ago. So things have moved earlier. And once you move earlier, your chance of extreme temperatures increase. So in this case, we weren't that much earlier than we would normally be. We usually look to have full bloom on Mother's Day, and that's really about where we were, but Mother's Day was a week earlier than it usually is too. So that's what really exposed us. Our bloom was about a week early, and anytime you're early, and you have a chance of getting colder. Funny thing, it was the just a few days before we were at 94 degrees.
it was really hurricane.
And it caught us a little bit off guard because we were kind of expecting a low, maybe 28, maybe 30, but to get down to, for us, 26, and I've seen some reports they were down to 22.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty tough to survive that.
So it's good news that there will be plenty of apples for people to pick. The wholesale business has suffered a little bit. I'm wondering, I know that there was an apple in development, and you were on the program, and you mentioned you were thinking about calling it Fergalicious. I forget what the actual name is.
Yeah, its actual name is Pizzazz.
Pizzazz. So how's Pizzazz going?
It's really going well. We planted 40,000 Pizzazz trees here in Eau Claire, and it's all irrigated. It's all in trellis system. It's we're still in the tree growing mode there, okay. So we weren't really expecting a crop there this year. We have some, but that are a little older that were experimental trees. But that's an apple that's being widely planted in New York and in our area and then in Washington. And we really introduced it in the grocery store world in about 300 grocery stores this last winter. And all reports are really, really positive on that one. So we're really still really excited about that.
Excellent. That reminds me, too, UW River Falls, there's a professor over there that's working on like his real passion is creating a stone fruit that's able to handle our climate a little bit better. Now they're working on grapes that can handle our climate a little better. The idea is to get table grapes that can be grown in Wisconsin. And so is there any effort going into making, you know, apple trees that can withstand these kind of frosts?
Well, there's been work on that front for years, especially out of the University of Minnesota.
Sure.
Most of the varieties that come out of the University of Minnesota are very winter hardy. But that's where the focus is on winter hardiness, making sure that the tree can live through 20 below, 30 below zero. Not so much on a flower. You know, I don't think there's much hope for a flower to be able to survive that kind of temperature. So, so even those trees that can live through our winters, when they have flowers on them, it's pretty tough for them to get much below 24, maybe 25 degrees might be the outside shot.
Right. We're going to take our first break here of the West Side. We're going to bid adieu to Tom Ferguson. Any final thoughts for folks out there listening?
Yeah, definitely don't write off apple orchards coming up this fall. I know that's a long ways away, and everybody will probably forget about this, but there will definitely be apples out there and all the fun activities for the fall for people to go out to all the orchards throughout the whole state.
Hay wagon rides and
That's right, all that fun stuff.
All right, Tom Ferguson, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It's fun to be here.
When we come back, we'll speak with, we'll have more guests on the program, including Mark Hagedorn of UW Extension here in Eau Claire, Jim Holt of the Farm Bureau Federation, and Darren Von Ruden of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. This is the West Side. If you've got questions or comments, give us a call. We'd love to hear your thoughts. 800-228-5615. You'll get right on the air. Phone lines are wide open. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll be back in just a bit.
Support for WPR comes from Wasco Windows, a Wisconsin-based manufacturer of doors and windows using Rehau Ganeo profiles from Germany for passive and low-energy houses. Wasco is online at wascowindows.com. Support also comes from the Chippewa Valley Home Builders Association, showcasing 16 new homes at the Parade of Homes, June 11th through 18th. Pre-sale Parade of Homes tickets are available starting this weekend at Gordy's Market and Menards locations.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio Stations 88.3 WHWC, Menominee, Eau Claire, and 88.7 WRFW, River Falls. Thanks for tuning us in this Monday morning. We're talking about agriculture in western Wisconsin. Just got a update on the apple and other fruit situation happening in western Wisconsin, an ugly frost that is impacting growers. Now we're going to turn to the grain side of things, and we are still joined again by Darren Von Ruden. He is the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Jim Holt, president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, and Mark Hagedorn, UW Extension Ag Agent Extraordinaire here in Eau Claire County, joins me in the studio. 800-228-5615. So turning, like I said, to the grain side of things, does this kind of a frost, and I'm going to go to you, Mark Hagedorn, but gentlemen, Darren and Tom, or Jim, excuse me, feel free to jump in. Does this kind of a frost at this point, you know, 2 weeks ago on Saturday, does that hurt grain? Does that hurt like corn or soybeans that might be just popping out of the ground? What do you say, Mark Hagedorn?
Well, just before we came on air, we were visiting a little bit outside the studio about this, and most definitely a lot of crops got burnt by that frost a week ago Saturday. Corn, for instance. A lot of it, as you were driving around in the country, you could see a dark hue to it or a real sick yellow. Okay. So you could tell that the foliage above ground had been, in fact, frosted. But the really neat thing about young plants is the growing point is still below the surface. Mm-hmm. So give it 3, 4, 5 days, and you look out in these cornfields now, and you've got nice green rows. Things are coming along pretty nicely. Where we really run into problems is if you think back to a Father's Day frost we had in 92. Growing point there was an inch and a half above ground.
Oh, wow.
We got frozen, and it was catastrophic then. So what we need to do is try to stay away from frosts as we get closer and closer to Father's Day.
Yeah, let's hope we're past it. You know, that's one of my favorite things about having folks involved in the agriculture on the show. We end up talking about the weather, you know, an awful lot, but I guess that's to be expected. So what about as far as farmers getting into the field and getting their crops into the ground? Where are we at? Are we ahead of schedule, behind schedule? I mean, what are some of the numbers? I saw that that we might be a little ahead on some things, but sometimes a little bit behind. It seems pretty average overall. Is that about right, Mark?
Yeah, if we take a look at our Wisconsin Crop Progress and Condition Report that comes out every Monday, so I've got to refer to the one that came out a week ago because we don't have new data yet.
Okay.
But if you compare last Monday to a year ago, we're just darn near in the same boat as where we were. And we were in pretty good shape a year ago, as you recall, mm-hmm. record crops just about straight across the board. The big driver is now going to be what Mother Nature does or doesn't do to us.
Right.
So we're sitting pretty good now. Most of the corn is in the ground. A lot of the beans are in. First crop alfalfa is coming off. Oats and wheat look real good. So what we really need is maybe an inch or two of rain tonight and let everybody take a break and then restart on Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah, I always forget. And Darren or Jim, please jump in. What is the perfect rain? It's about an inch and then that's it? Then a nice hot week or something like that?
Well, in my area, it's an inch every Saturday night.
Every Saturday night.
If you can set that up for us, we'll be just fine.
I think people are working on that, aren't they?
Good.
Scientists in Washington. Let's talk about, how about input costs? There was a fellow, Bruce Jones, Department of Applied Agriculture. I almost said economics at UW-Madison. He mentioned that some of the input costs for farmers are a little cheaper, specifically energy costs. I mean, we're seeing that the gas price is going up right now, and diesel is probably going up with it. But how big of a difference is this? I mean, not long ago, we had $3 and $4 a gallon fuel costs. So, Darren Von Ruden, how big of a break is that for farmers?
Well, it certainly helps bring the optimism back as far as what the final profit margins are going to be on the crop farms. So it certainly helps, but as we're seeing the oil barrel prices have risen here recently again, so mm-hmm. is it going to last through harvest this year? Can we expect lower input costs? They're going to be just a little bit lower, but probably not compared to what farmers are going to be receiving for their product. If Mother Nature does cooperate with that inch of rain every Saturday night, as Jim says,
right.
You know, we're probably going to be looking at a record crop year again, which means that your end pay price is going to probably be on the low side. So, you know, input costs certainly are lower, but if we're receiving a lower price at the end, it doesn't help with them lower prices.
Jim Holt.
Yeah, Darren's right on. Our input prices are down some, but the prices of most of all commodities, whether you're talking about milk or meat or grain, have declined a lot from the last few years.
Yeah.
It's interesting how things cut both ways sometimes. With fuel prices lower, it probably has the impact of lowering grain prices because we don't have the same opportunity for things such as ethanol as far as being a higher profitability level. So, lower fuel prices help us on the input side, but it probably also has a little bit of a bleed through in that it detracts from what our corn price might be in the fall as well.
That's interesting. So we're not just talking about fuel. If oil is lower than, you know, the historic highs, I mean, that also kind of affects fertilizer, ammonia,
yes,
et cetera?
It does impact fertilizer, and I think primarily on the nitrogen side mm-hmm. is kind of a direct response. But even just when commodity prices are lower, whether it's dairy or grain or beef, the whole input side of the business recognizes that the industry is going to have trouble, you know, pain making those things go. So prices tend to soften some because a lower usage happens as well.
Yeah, I imagine they can't afford that. So, Mark Hagedorn, please jump in.
Yeah, I think Jim's spot on there. The other interesting component or two that people need to bear in mind is farmers are really good business people, and they are prone to do forward contracting as a means and method to try to act as a safety net for their input costs. Mm-hmm. So you'll see people keeping an eye on fertilizer markets, keep an eye on where fuel is at, and they'll forward contract or lock prices in at as low a price as they can. And, I mean, that is a double-edged sword, of course,
right,
because you think you're buying low and then all of a sudden the market goes down. But if you know what your cost of production is, you can do a good job of managing with safety net. So this is something that we're seeing more and more people implement into their portion of production. As Tom was mentioning, they've got crop insurance that they utilize crop insurance for all of the other grain mm-hmm. crops out there. We have safety nets in place for dairy production too. So it's only good business, and farmers are doing as good a job as they can. It just is really tough when you take a look at what commodity prices as far as particularly corn and milk have done to us right now.
Yeah, it seems like we in the state, and I'm sure this is nationwide, but we were at a real high in terms of, you know, corn prices. I don't know if beans were up there, but milk was also pretty good 2 or 3 years ago, and now we're kind of in the dregs, it sounds like. So as far as the break-even price for, say, something like corn, I just read today that the break-even corn price for this year is going to be $3.25 a bushel. Now, I hear something like that, a number like that, which is probably going to change a lot, but just how many years ago was it almost up to $7 a bushel, or am I exaggerating, Mark Hagedorn?
No. A couple of years ago, corn did make it up to just right around $7 a bushel, and grain farmers were very, very happy people. But just like every other aspect of agriculture, you work with cycles.
Yeah.
And that was the top of the cycle, and right now we're pretty much at the bottom of the cycle. Same thing goes for milk, as you mentioned. In 2014, we were at $22.57 a hundred.
Yeah.
In 2015, we were at $16.19, and this year we're at $12.75 projected for May. So that's $10 a hundredweight we've lost in the last 3 years, and you multiply that times 30 cows or 3,000 cows, it has a real significant impact on your cash flow.
Absolutely. Jim Holt, you wanted to jump in?
Well, you know, as each of the three of us were early in our careers, I think we probably didn't have or didn't see the huge impact that the global economy now has on us. These prices that Darren and Mark have talked about are not only here, they're across the world. Something happens in a country that's far away from us impacts our price. So it's how global impact, trade have a very major impact on local prices.
Mm-hmm. And Darren Von Roon, I want to bring you in here because I know that you're an organic dairy farmer. So what's the break even for – I've heard that the break even for dairy farmers and this would be, I guess, for non-organic, but $15 per hundredweight, is that about right?
Yep, that's about right. They're free, and that's just your basic cost of production, too. You know, if you want to get family living expenses in there and
that
stuff, too.
That doesn't include that, right?
Right, yeah. You know, you're looking at the $18.50, $19 range for average cost of production. So, sure. You know, it's tough when you're looking at the numbers that Mark was just talking about down in that $12.70 range for the next year. What are farmers going to do to survive? You know, the diversity in Wisconsin certainly helps. You know, we have farmers that do different things, many different things, pigs and dairy and crops all together, or, you know, other parts of the country where it's just strictly dairy.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
those guys are really getting hit hard right now.
A whole economy is affected then
in
that case, whereas, yeah, we do have a lot of, I mean, dairy is still very important. I think that's, as far as the amount of export or the dollars, it's still number one, but...
Yeah, here in the state, dairy is the number one commodity as far as income to the state of Wisconsin.
What kind of bright sides are there for low commodity prices, you know, when it comes to farmers? For example, for corn, you know, we saw when corn was high, people were planting corn anywhere they could find soil and you know, the rents probably went up a lot. So does the does a low commodity price for corn and beans actually help farmers in a way with rent price? Jim Holt?
Well, you know, the easy quip is that the solution for low prices is low prices, and the solution for high prices is high prices. And that basically means that supply and demand does work. It isn't instantaneous, and it takes a period of time, as Mark was relating through his numbers. But, you know, the high prices for corn drove a lot higher production for corn. The low prices for corn and dairy and soybeans and you name it will eventually have an impact, and those commodities will recover. But as these two gentlemen said, it's getting through these difficult times, and that's when management becomes even more important.
Mm-hmm. And what the cycles? How long do they last? I mean, I was talking with Mark Hagedorn a week or two ago about, we were talking about beef cattle, and we'll get into that in a little bit, but the cycle on that is a little slower maybe than the season-to-season cycle for corn.
Yeah, there are perceived cycles that run through different commodities, but if you have the crystal ball for it today, that'd be very helpful. You
can share
that with all of our other farmers.
Is Google a crystal ball?
I don't know.
No, I don't think so.
You know, it seems like, as Tom was mentioning earlier too, you know, if you get one bad year out of every five, you're doing really good. So when you get three out of 5 years bad, like there, you'll probably be in here shortly.
Yeah.
You know, that's when it gets really hard to stay in the business, especially for young producers that are starting out.
And right. 800-228-5615. Give us a call with your questions, your thoughts on agriculture in Western Wisconsin. Do you have any input on commodity prices? Are you a farmer yourself? Let us know. We would love to have your questions or comments on the air. We've got Mark Hagedorn. He's a UW Extension agent from Eau Claire County. Jim Holt is president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, and Darren Von Ruden is president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. If you've missed part of the program or would like to listen again, check out our online archives. Go to WPR.org. Find the West Side Show link. Click on that, and you'll have years and years of archived West Side programs to listen to. A lot of data there. So we had an El Nino situation, which I believe is a warming. Yeah, that's the warming of the top layer of water in the Pacific. So now it's said that there is a development of La Nina, which is the opposite. And that's kind of a cyclical thing as well. So what would this have any impact on the growing season? Some analysts say it could lower yield for corn, for example, by 10 bushels per acre. I mean, that's real crystal ball stuff. But any weather predictions for the whole season, Jim Holt?
The best weather prediction I can give you is that there will be weather today, tomorrow, and next Monday. What it will be is a little harder to figure out. You know, one of the things that helps us deal with changes in weather is the genetic changes that happen in our seed that we purchase. There's a constant process of trying to breed and select for better crops in that they can react and deal with extreme situations.
Sure.
That's one of the benefits we have. It's one of the things that allows us to kind of keep up with feeding the world as we know it. There's some controversy around some of that, but I know there's a recent report that supported some of the processes that farmers use. And one of the things that we sometimes don't recognize in that situation is that those advances have allowed us to use a lot less pesticides in our industry.
Sure.
And I would really be willing to bet that every farmer is saying that's a great thing. That's a great thing.
Jim Holt, the first one to jump into a real hot topic here, genetically modified organisms, I guess, in this case corn. What about that, Darren Von Ruden, you're doing the organic dairy thing. Does Wisconsin Farmers Union have thoughts one way or another about GMO crops?
We have members that do everything, so it's one of those things that We certainly understand as an organic producer, I can't force my neighbor to do what I do, and he can't force me to do what we do. That's one thing nice about living in America. We have the freedoms to do what we sure. what we choose to do. And but you know, that as technology changes, you know, even on the human side, today we are hopefully smarter and more athletic, and you can see that by our athletes that we're putting out today are a lot more athletic than they were back in the 1900s. And we have the same thing going on with our seeds and our genetics and our animals, too. They're producing 10, 15 times today what they were back in the 40s and 50s. And
right.
So I think as long as we're willing to keep adapting new technologies, I think we'll be in good shape.
First call of the morning goes to Dave in Augusta. Dave, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hey, good morning, Rich. I'm sorry to be a bother. I seem like I call every week, but
hey, we love it.
I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
My question is to the panel or to your guests: what effect have large corporate dairy farms had on the small mom and pop 35 to 45 cow dairy operation in the state of Wisconsin?
Sure, good question. Thanks for that, Dave. Dave and Augusta. So, Darren, I'll go to you since you're more in the dairy world. I think, Jim, you had dairy cows at one
yes.
point, but then you switched more over to beef?
Beef and crops, yes.
Beef and crops. Okay, so Darren Von Roon, I'll start with you. Do we see any 30 and 40 cow dairies anymore? Is it more like 150 is kind of the minimum? And I guess the question was, these mega, you know, some are in the thousands in terms of head of cattle.
You know, on a yearly basis, they probably don't have a lot of effect, but when you get to a year like this year when there's more production than processing capacities have here in the state and while the upper Midwest more or less, you know, the 40, 50 cow operators that the processors have been used to working with for years don't really have that much of an effect. But when you have an operation that goes from 1,000 to 2,000 cows, and all of a sudden that same processor has to absorb that much extra production, mm-hmm. That's probably where we're seeing the biggest effect from those farms at this point in time.
Jim Holt or – yeah, Jim Holt.
Certainly there has been a change in our industry over our careers, Darren's and mine and, mm-hmm. and Mark's as well, watching the size and scale of dairies change. And that's been – a feature of pretty much any industry you look at across
absolutely.
The country. And yes, the size of dairy farms has steadily grown. One thing that consumers might want to keep in mind, though, is somewhere around 97 to 98% of all the dairies in the state are still family-owned and operated.
Mm-hmm.
We sometimes we don't see the forest for the trees sometimes, I believe. You know, those farms that are larger and are still family-owned and operated, they have done that because it's been a good business decision for them. Yes, they would like to have the same kind of social life and opportunities that anybody else in the state would enjoy. And sometimes that includes getting larger and having more employees. So
mm-hmm.
While it's a little bit easy to poke at it as being a bad thing, it's an occurrence that's driven by the economy.
Sure. I mean, even companies like Walmart, you know, they started as a corner store, I imagine, and that's the argument that we hear all the time. So now I want to jump into soybeans real quick before we get a little deeper into dairy and beef. Global demand for soybeans is ahead of last year based on some USDA stuff I read, 32%. So what does that mean for bean farmers in counties like Eau Claire? Mark Hagedorn, are we going to see, you know, more acreage of beans happening than like a mass planting of beans like we did with corn, you know, 3 years back? Or are we not quite there yet?
I don't necessarily think we're going to see a mass planting of soybeans in Eau Claire County. We've definitely seen soybeans via genetics mm-hmm. become a more viable crop in this part of the United States. When we moved up here in 1986, there were 40 acres of soybeans being grown in Barron County.
Huh.
And now there's thousands and thousands. But that's because we've got beans that we can grow. And climate has warmed up just a smidge, which has helped that aspect of agronomic production. But you're seeing the predictions for a number of corn acres being planted, maybe even backed off a little because people are seeing a slightly sweeter market with soybeans. Mm. And right at the moment, soybean meal is one of the few agronomic nice places that we can go. So we're going to see a little bit more acres of beans put in, I'm anticipating, because the demand is there for bean meal, the world market, and that's what we have to look at, as Jim has pointed out.
Yeah.
This isn't just a Wisconsin thing or a North America thing. What we do is impacted by what's happening, and the big driver's China.
Yep.
We also need to take a look at what's happening in South America because there are a lot of row crops grown down there that compete with what farmers up here are doing.
Jim Holt, you got any beans in the ground?
I do, yes. And like many grain farmers, we tend not to plant the same crop 2 years in a row. And so if you're growing a basic grain rotation here, it's corn 1 year, beans the next year, then back to corn. And so Mark is spot on the likelihood of us suddenly growing a lot more soybeans. It has to fit with an agronomic plan, a best use of your resources, and also a driver from economics. What is the bean price compared to the corn price?
Sure. With that, let's take our final break. We've still got a lot of show left and a lot of opportunity to get your calls in on the west side. Well, I'm joined by we heard from Tom Ferguson of Ferguson's Orchards. Right now on the program, we've got Mark Hagedorn of UW Extension, Jim Holt of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, and Darren Von Ruden of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. We can take your call, 1-800-228-5615. This is the West Side.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio is voluntary. It's a choice. And that's why we're so grateful to our members. You don't have to donate, but you do. And because of you, there are 24 hours a day of inspiring, informative programs on the radio every day. Thank you so much for your support.
Support for WPR comes from the UW Health Breast Center, providing second opinions for Wisconsin women and men diagnosed with breast cancer. In healthcare, experience matters. More at uwhealth.org/second opinion. Support also comes from Bremer Bank, committed to offering personalized guidance and financial solutions to help clients achieve their goals and realize their dreams. Details at bremer.com. Bremer Bank, for what's ahead.
I'm Rich Kramer. This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking about agriculture in western Wisconsin, and we're talking about the grain futures. We're going to be talking a little bit about the price of milk, what it's expected to be. It's down from years past, and beef is also down. We'll talk about that in a bit, and if we have time, we'll talk about the TPP and what that might mean for western Wisconsin. If you've got a question or a comment, let us know, 800-228-5615. So, Darren Von Ruden, back to dairy. We touched on this a little bit, that the dairy price per hundredweight is down a little bit compared with kind of the good years of 2014 and 2015. So the prediction now is that it's going to be around $13.15 or $13.65 per hundredweight. That's down 50 cents from last month's report. So that's a big drop. What's happening?
Well, it has a lot to do with world supply.
Sure.
U.S. supply, a lot of it has to do with manufacturing capacity. When you have truckloads of milk that are basically being dumped because there just isn't manufacturing capacity, that's what's driving that price down right now.
That's happening in Wisconsin,
you think? That's happening in Wisconsin. There's been reports of throughout even into the East Coast, Michigan, Ohio, New York, Pennsylvania, have all heard of truckloads of milk being dumped because there just isn't processing capacity. You know, that's a bad thing about milk. It only has about a day of life once it's into the cooler. And if you don't put it into cheese or into fluid, it's got to be taken care of. And capacities just aren't there. Farmers have become more efficient or producing more, and the processing sector hasn't been growing quite as fast as it should be. But there's some good news there on that side. The Kraft plant over New Ulm, they're supposed to be spending $100 million on that plant, increasing its capacity over the next year or two here now. And down in Monroe, there's a couple of different plants down there that have been increasing capacity, but it's just not quite fast enough to make sure that the farmer's milk can be processed into commodities that can be used for commercial disappearance.
Wow. Now, the fact that we've got this oversupply of milk, I mean, that's tied in with when prices were good, everyone was getting as many dairy cows as they could, basically?
Or? Well, it's one of those things that here in the U.S., anyway, we've been seeing close to 2% production increase for the last 30 years
no
or
matter
so now.
What.
And so, and a lot of that's genetics, not necessarily cow numbers. Cow numbers have been going up and down around that 9.2 million animals here in the States. And so, you know, a lot of the driver right now is from the world side. There's been overproduction throughout the world. The Russian embargo on the European Union, so it's putting a lot of their milk into the world supply rather than going into Russia. And Russia is the only country in the world right now, besides a couple few small countries, that actually are deficient on milk. But with their embargo because of the war in the Ukraine there, you know, that's what's causing that. So if we can get around some of those hurdles, you know, there could be a bright spot, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon.
Yikes. And I saw some predictions that it could go as low as 12. I mean, that would be...
That'd be catastrophic. You know, back in 2008, 2009, when the financial crisis hit, farmers were down in the $8.50, $9 range. But prices for their inputs were half of what they are today. So that $12 range today really should be $14 range compared to 2008-9 levels.
Gotcha. Mark Hagedorn, let's talk beef. Cattle prices have reportedly had a rough spring in Wisconsin after peaking in late 2014 and early 2015. Prices have been going down ever since then. So what's happening with the beef market, and what are the we had a fascinating conversation on this a couple weeks ago. I had no idea that beef was such a big deal in western Wisconsin. So what's it look like for a beef farmer?
Well, beef is another one of those cyclical markets, and we are at the top of the cycle back last year, and now we're starting to see two or three things come together, and it's sort of a long story. I'll try to make it short.
Well, we've got some time.
Probably the start of this whole process was back in 2010 and 2011 when the big drought hit Texas, which is a huge producer of cow calves. And that started a couple different things going. First, it started sucking all of the hay out of the state of Wisconsin because we had large inventories built up. It went down there. They paid us good money for it. They fed all of that up.
Shipping grass across the country?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Every time you have a drought somewhere, the most mobile forage is hay. Well, they fed all that up, and the next thing they do is start to sell off cows and calves. So the cows and calves went to market, and then we ended up having a big snowstorm where over 10,000 cows were lost in the state of South Dakota in 2013, took a bunch more cows out of production. So without these cows, we're getting no calves, which means beef inventories were getting low. This, of course, drives up the demand or the price of beef. And then it's also coupling with really high grain prices, so no one can really afford to keep feeder steers in a lot. Now the timeline ticks ahead. Corn starts to come down. People start putting cows back into the production cycle, but it takes 9 months for a cow to have a calf, and then it takes another year, year and a half to get that steer ready to be processed to go into the food system. So we're finally back to that point after about 5 or 6 years with cheap corn, full feedlots. Beef prices are starting to taper off. The other big enabler to this was milk prices. With milk prices being really high in 2014, dairy farmers were holding their middle-of-the-road to marginal cows back into their herds because they were able to get such good milk prices for those animals.
Even if they didn't produce a whole lot.
Even if they didn't produce as well as what you would like to under normal circumstances.
Sure.
So now we're seeing milk prices go down. People are cleaning up their herds. These cull cows are going into the food cycle. And whether the listener realizes it or not, a majority of our country's hamburger comes from retired milk cows.
Oh, wow.
It's relatively low-fat, lean meat, a little more economically priced than feedlot steers. So it's amazing how we have two or three different aspects of agriculture all coming together, plus Mother Nature again, to drive just exactly what the producer is having to do and what the consumer is receiving on their end and what they have to pay for it.
Huh. So, Jim Holtz, I mean, as a beef producer, what are you thinking about this this year's outlook?
Well, it's it marks right on that that price has rolled, and we hit that high in 14, and it was probably good if you sold some beef animals at that time. And but it is a cycle. It will find a bottom, and then it will recover again. But, you know, you have to have the ability to withstand those more difficult times, whether it's beef or dairy or grain, and plan for the future.
So does that include insurance? Because I know that there are – there are some federal programs involved for, say, for dairy prices if they get real low, that there's some assistance there. Is the same true for dairy?
There's not as much of a defined program in the beef side as there's in the dairy or the grain crops.
Okay. So we've got a minute left. Let's talk about TPP. How about that? Mm-hmm. We can talk about that in about a minute. Real quick, we're still – I think Congress still has to approve it basically, but I know that the opinions of the different farm groups here are different. So let's start out with Darren Von Ruden. What are the thoughts of WFU on the TPP?
One of the biggest concerns of ours was currency manipulation, and mm-hmm. the Senate and House never did anything with that. And we've seen in the last couple of weeks here now, Japan has actually come out and said that they're going to use that to their best advantage that they can with the tariffs. And so without currency manipulation, I wish that TPP won't go anywhere. But it probably is because the multinational corporations have the ear of Washington.
Gotcha. Jim Holt, that's from the W Farm Bureau Federation.
Well, agriculture in general benefits when trade happens. And so we see some benefits in it. Darren's got some appropriate concerns, but it's supported by both the Democrats and Republicans, so I think it will probably happen.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for the discussion. Always learn so much from you guys. Tom Ferguson was with us earlier. He's the owner of Ferguson's Orchards. Mark Hagedorn is a UW Extension Agriculture agent. Jim Holt is the president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. And Darren Von Ruden is president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Thanks for all the listeners. Thanks for the call, Dave and Augusta. We'll be back next Monday morning.